How are we doing, Reality Church? You guys all right? Listen, man, we are so honored today to have Richmond Wandera here with us. He is internationally known. The first time I saw Richmond, I was at Global Leadership Summit. Some of you guys go there, spoke to thousands of leaders across the globe that day and has been an exponential. He actually came up through the Compassion Project and got skills to be a carpenter and then became an accountant. Now he's a pastor, and he's actually saw a need in his home country of Uganda for training of pastors. And his own training, as a matter of fact, he got a little frustrated. I want to do the work of God, but I don't know everything I want to know. So he got a scholarship, a unique scholarship, to come to Moody Bible Institute, got a degree there, and is now getting it, working on his doctorate of leadership from Lancaster Bible College in Pennsylvania. Just so honored to have him here. So please help me welcome Richmond Wandera. All right. So while Richmond and I are talking, you guys are going to have an opportunity to text in questions, okay? Now take this seriously. The 9 o'clock crowd just did not, and then we got 40 questions when we just opened it up, and we didn't get to all of them. So text them in as we're having our conversation, and I think that'll help you guys get a more complete understanding of where we're coming from and where Richmond's coming from. So we've had a little bit of chance to get to know each other, but why don't you tell us a little bit about your beginnings. As a child, what was it like for you growing up in Uganda?
First, let's say good morning, Reality Church.
Good morning.
My name is Richmond Wandera. I come from Uganda, a small country in the eastern part of Africa. Uganda is the world's leading country with the youngest population. We have 40 million people in my country, but 70% of the 40 million are below the age of 30. And why that is? We have gone through war after war after war, that we have lost our fathers, our grandfathers, and generations have been swept away. And so before you, I might seem like a young man, but in my country, I'm quite old. And but it was in these seasons of death and tribe and war that I lost my father. My father was murdered in the presence of my mother. And in one day, it seemed to me like I had lost both my parents. My father physically, he was gone. But my mother, emotionally, psychologically, she was not the same. Pastor Lance, we were six in the family. I was the third born. And I was 8 years old. And coming home and I just find a bloodied situation. And it was, I knew that moment that my life had changed.
Yeah.
And my mother was in a very disadvantaged position because, see, she was married off at the age of 15. By the time she was 27, she had six kids already. Mm. She didn't have a job. In Uganda, we have no welfare. Pastor Lance, we have nothing the government provides if you lose anything like that.
That's hard for us to comprehend. When a Ugandan family loses their dad, it's different in a way than when we think of someone, a father dies. How is it different in Uganda when a father dies?
There is no welfare,
yeah.
There is no government provision, there is no security. Uganda, the kind of jobs that we have and what they pay, the savings, I mean, savings is a mystery. I mean, to have someone save it's virtually close to impossible. Mm. And so my mother was stuck in this position. She's not educated. My grandparents did not educate my mother. And so she had no sellable skills. And so she's now stuck with six kids. And soon after that, we had this big knock on our door, and this was the landlord. And he wasn't playing. He said, "You guys can't afford this anymore. You've got to leave." And I cannot forget the day my mother told us, you know, I found a place in Naguru. Naguru was one of the largest slums in Uganda. And so my mother gathered six of us, and we walked off. We carried whatever we had and went off to Naguru. I remember jumping over gullies and places where you see dirty water, almost like what you saw in the video. And as we're jumping these places, we finally arrived. A 12 by 12 structure. And I saw one room. And I looked up and I could see that there's some, you know, nails from the nails and perforations in this old tin roof. And the room was dark, one small window. And so my mom said, you know, welcome home. We entered in this place and the environment was different. It affected my mother. She fell sick. And we also began falling sick, especially in the rainy seasons. Uganda has two seasons. It's not like the States where you have winter, summer, fall, spring. And spring. I mean, you have these seasons. In Uganda, it's not like that. We are right on the equator. We have just two seasons.
I still think in Nebraska, we only have three. But but you've got two. All right.
We have the what we call the rainy season, and it's 3 months of heavy rain. And then after that, 3 months of dry sun. And then the 3 months of rain come in again. Yeah. So it's just like clockwork. 3 months of rain, 3 months of sun. 3 months of rain, 3 months of sun. And in Naguru, when it was sunny, we had the dust. There was a lot of dust. There's a lot of that. But that was better than the rainy seasons. Because when the rain came up, you see, we had mosquitoes that breed in stagnant water. So all these, as you saw in the short clip that you saw, there's water stagnant. When people wash, houses are just so close together, a line of them sharing a single toilet. And there's no place, once someone has washed, there's no place. You can't walk half a mile to pour the water you have just washed your clothes with. And so these pathways are just going through houses. People would pour water right there, and the water would make its way all the way down to the valley. But ask me, Pastor Lenz, where are kids playing? Where are the children playing? As you saw, kids are playing here, right? Some are stepping in there, their things would fall in there, they're picking it up, and the rate of disease and the transferability, the contagiousness of this disease. I was afraid of the rain, and coming to the States, I found some people who love the rain, they love the rain. But for me, when rain came, I knew this is sickness.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, just 2 days that I feel were the worst days of my childhood. See, but after my father died, certain doors began to close.
Yeah.
The first door was obviously having a father in the home. He was gone. But the second door was the opportunity for health and education and food and the provisions, all those doors shut. So when I was told I could no longer go to school, I mean, I loved mathematics. I wanted to. I loved the mathematics teacher. They were wonderful. But now my potential began to die within me because I couldn't go to school. In Uganda, it's private education. I tell kids here all the time, if you live in the States and you have opportunity to go to school, you go to school. Yeah. And I wanted to go to school, and I couldn't afford it. And so we began staying home. So I and six of my siblings would wake up in the morning and just look around and say, where are you going today? We just kind of take that direction or take this direction. My mother said to us, there was no more money for food. And what began as visits to the street became a lifestyle. Would wake up in the morning and just go. And I remember two days I'll never forget. One was in the rainy season. I think that was the night that changed our life. It redefined who I was. See, it was about one in the night, and the rain had come. This is no ordinary rain. This is strong rain with the kind that had like almost like small specks, I mean, of ice. You could feel them. And because across Naguru, most people have tin roofs, once that rain comes, you can hear on the roofs of everyone, bah, bah, you can hear it. And so I was afraid, but then the wind came with the rain, yeah. And it pushed open the old tin roof that was holding our house, and the rain just poured into our one room. And so that night, Pastor Lenz, we stood on the wall just looking at each other, drenched and wet, no place to sleep. Those hours, those bitter hours of that night, I lost something. I lost who I was. I lost my dignity. My view of who I was changed that night. And I thought it couldn't get any worse. But then a few days after that, my mother said she has no money for food. I remember this particular day, it was about 4 PM. I was walking, and one lady looked at me, and she was in the neighborhood, and she called me and said, "Have you had lunch?" And I said to her, "I haven't had breakfast." She got a bite, something, and gave me a donut. She said, "You go on and eat that." I can never forget that bite.
When we think of hunger here, I don't think we're describing what you mean when you think of hunger. How did that affect you internally when you didn't know where your next meal was coming from?
When all that consumes a person is survival, I want to survive today. I hope I can make it today, because it's a real chance that I would not make it. I had seen my friends, my good friend Daniel died. This was one of my best play friends. He died. And so for me, it was a real fear. And so to live every day knowing that I might not make it, that affected my hope for tomorrow.
Right.
In fact, I'll pause a bit and just talk about, there's a parent that I talked to earlier on from this church, and I looked at a kid and asked the kid, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" You know what the kid told me? The kid told me she wants to take care of horses.
Yeah.
And I looked at the parents, and the parents were approving, saying, "Oh yeah, she can be whatever she wants to be."
Right.
But if you took that question and asked me or asked kids that you saw up there, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" They don't know what to do with that question. Because, I mean, they look around. All they're seeing is dirt, gray, brokenness. They don't know what to do with that question. And so I was in that state. We were just broken. And we had hit the bottom rock, needing God to intervene. Without which we're going to lose our lives.
And then something changed. Obviously, you're sitting here, you're healthy, yeah. You look young to me.
Thank you.
So somewhere along the line, something happened. What happened, Richmond?
My mother had about Compassion International from a family that had benefited through from Compassion. And so she said, "You know, I want to go." So the Compassion works through the local church. So there was a church. Right. My father was not a believer. We had never stepped into church. But my mother had, at a local church, there was a Compassion project. Yeah. She went quickly and said, "Look, I have 6 kids, my father, my husband, this is who I am, this is my health." My mother's health was going down the stream hard. Yeah. And Compassion quickly ran to our home. They came, took pictures, and said to us, "Pray. Pray that if someone stops the sponsor, you will let you know immediately."
So now, you didn't know right then that it was going to happen. They just said pray.
No, they just said pray.
Right.
And so for me, it was 3.5 months later. A man called David, who worked with Compassion, came down the hill. Our home was right in the middle of that hill going down. And he looked at my mother with a big smile and said, "Richmond has got a sponsor." A 15-year-old girl called Heather had decided to sponsor me. I could not find the words
to describe the dancing that filled our home at that news. See, I come from the Bagisi tribe, and we do some shoulder dancing a lot when we are celebrating. And so I'll show you. So my mother gets this news.
Yeah.
And she goes off. So African women will have a way of celebrating. They'd go something like this. Now, that's the women. They will do it loud. But then when I saw her doing her shoulder dance, I thought to myself, that's good news. And so I run off to my mom. And so together, we're just... we were going, shoulder dance going around. And and so they said, go on straight away to the Compassion Project. So I went to the Compassion Project. I met another gentleman called Uncle Biansi. Well, he's not my uncle. We just call everyone who's older uncle. But he's tall guy. And he bent over and said, Richmond, welcome. Don't forget this number. From today, your number is UG129/0064. I could never forget that number. See, that number, he said to me, whenever I felt sick, feeling diarrhea or feeling, you know, my eyes, I had a problem with my eyes, whenever you fall sick, don't even run to the church. Just run straight to the family clinic as a dispensary in the outskirts of Nagar Islam. Just tell them your number. They will treat you. And don't worry about the bill.
From that day forward, your life completely changed.
Completely. Completely. I had hope. I could look into my tomorrow and say, here I come. I could look at mosquitoes and say, do your worst. I've got my number.
Yeah.
And malaria, people should not be dying from malaria. Every year, 25,000 kids die from malaria. Malaria is treatable. It's just two pills.
Yeah.
And now I was told you could get those pills in time. I was given a mosquito net. Heather from a distance was giving $38 a month. It was radically changing my life.
Right.
And so at the Compassion Project, and they gave me other news, not just health.
Right.
They told me, Richmond, you can now go back to school.
That's amazing. Wow.
I went back to school. The potential that was dying got to turn around. I look at what I'm doing right now. If you had found me on the street, you would never believe.
Yeah. Well, what is it that you're doing now? I mean, in addition to being here with us and investing in us, how are you spending your time these days?
I am a pastor today. I'm the pastor of the very church I joined as a Compassion
child. That is so cool. That is so cool.
And I'll tell you one thing that led to that. You see, my sponsor, Heather, I got the best sponsor in the world. She loved writing. And in my home, there were not many beautiful things, but man, I had letters from my sponsor, probably the most beautiful assets in my life.
Yeah.
And she sent me stickers. But I remember how words, Richmond, I love you. Those are not words I was hearing as a child. She said, I love you. This is why for me, sponsorship there's a financial element to it, but for me, it's really discipleship.
Yeah.
Because poverty had told me, I am nothing. Yeah. You are not worth it.
Yeah.
And then here, someone is saying, I love you. You can't love something that is worthless. And here I am, receiving letters from my sponsor. She sent me stickers. These stickers, I put those stickers on every single thing and she sent me one day a card that sings. I opened the card and it went off and I ran off to my friends. And I said, guys, you listen to this. And so, from a distance, a stranger was changing my life, confronting the lies in my life and speaking the truth about Christ, saying, you are not a child of poverty. You belong to Christ.
Awesome.
And I'll tell you, it was as a result of that I made a decision to follow Jesus.
Yeah.
And now, a few years later, I was pastoring the church that I joined as a Compassion child.
And while you were pastoring, you got frustrated at your own inability to kind of answer questions or what you knew, and you said you made some mistakes, but you didn't just sit there in that frustration. What'd you do?
I sought out training.
Yeah.
And Compassion, again, through its connections, was able to bring me to Moody Bible Institute in Chicago.
Yeah.
Now, there's a long story there of culture shock and studying. And I don't have time to go into it, but it was at Moody that I learned things that answered the deepest questions I was asking as a pastor.
Yeah.
And it was there that I learned skills that 99.9% of pastors in Uganda did not have. And so I thought to myself, I have been given much. And so I launched without the Pastor's Discipleship Network, a ministry that I would use to bring the training that I had received to hundreds of pastors in Uganda.
Yeah.
Right now, the Lord has so blessed that effort that we are in 4 East African countries right now.
4 East Africa. And your vision is for Africa,
my
train pastors
Africa.
In Africa. That is such a huge vision. So not only did he say, look, this is something I need, this is something that a lot of pastors need, and he formed the Pastors Discipleship Network and is now training hundreds of pastors today. So that's quite a distance. That's quite a way to go. Somewhere in some church, a 15-year-old girl named Heather said, I think I'm going to sponsor this boy. And that's why you're here today, because she made that decision.
That's right. And the ripples.
Yeah.
My family, as I speak now, all 5 of my siblings have made a decision to follow Jesus.
Awesome.
My mother made a decision to follow Jesus.
Awesome.
Forever, Pastor Lanz, forever, we are not the same again.
That's incredible. So I'm going to give you a chance to do something that, you know, I sometimes wish someone would give me a chance to do somewhere. Where, if you had a shot to just say something unfiltered, no consequences at all. Here we are. We're in America. We're Reality Church. You're going to hop on a plane, right? You're going to be flying away from
next
here.
Next week.
So you got your shot to say whatever it is that's on your heart that burns in there that you wish you could say. What would you say to us?
You know, coming to the States, I've been shocked at how blessed this country is. I think for me, I would ask you a question. Why have you been blessed this much? And I would add that if you make a decision to live simply so that someone else can simply live, that single decision radically changes a child's world. It changes another person's whole life and could bring them to the place that the eternal Father intended for them to be. Make a decision today to live simply so that someone else can simply live.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we know that something like this, maybe some of you are hearing this sort of thing for the first time. You're not even familiar with Compassion International. We're going to have multiple chances for you to ask questions even after the service. But let's see whether some of you guys have been thinking and texting in. I warned you at the beginning. So let's see whether we've got any questions coming in right now. Did getting help make your family a target from others who didn't get that help?
That's a good question, but I think it's contextually set, because I wouldn't get that question in Uganda. We have a very strong communal culture.
Okay.
And my brothers rejoiced with me.
Yeah.
Because they knew that if I was helped, they were helped.
Yeah.
And my sister Doreen, I didn't mention it, she was 6 years old. She also got a sponsor from Australia, Don and Julie Thompson. We'll never forget the sponsors because we prayed for them. My sister also got a sponsor, and I rejoiced for her. My brothers rejoiced for her. And so as a result, they knew that our sponsorship was also benefiting them. I mean, I came home with a mosquito net, And all six of us were in that mosquito net.
Right.
Now, when my sister got sponsored as well, Doreen, we had two mosquito nets, which, whoo, the pressure was released from her. Now we had two.
Yeah.
And I couldn't come with food, all these bags of food, and say, this food is mine.
Yeah.
No, we all shared. And my speaking of complementary interventions, my mother, her health just kept going down. And so anything that affects the child, compassion is immediately there to address. And so I couldn't go to school and have a good day at school when my mother was sick.
Yeah.
And so because my mother's health was affecting me, compassion has a markup amount on the ordinary $38 a month, which is about $45 a month. That's extra $7 goes to a pool that they call complementary interventions.
Yeah.
And through that pool, my mother got the treatment that she needed. And so at the end of the day, we all as a family were beneficiaries of that one sponsorship. And so, no, just did getting help from your family make us a target? No, it did not.
Okay.
Our community rejoiced with us as well.
Awesome. Did you ever meet your sponsor?
I did. Actually, let me put it this way. Oh, man, that was the most surreal time for me. But I had two sponsors. So Heather sponsored me through high school. But along the way, she had got to know other kids that were in desperate situations. Now she was sponsoring 8 kids. And so by the time I was done with high school, I was now joining university. But Compassion's Leadership Development Program is to sponsor a kid at university is more expensive than sponsoring a kid in their primary school and secondary school. And so it was now a markup from $38 a month to $380 a month to sponsor me through college. And she couldn't. So she told one of her friends, said, look, I want to sponsor Richmond, but I can't.
Yeah.
This is a gentleman in business. His name was Rick Robinson.
Yeah.
And Rick Robinson said, $300 a month through college? You sure? And he said, yeah, I can do that. And so Rick sponsored me through college for me to get my accounting degree.
Right.
So I have two sponsors. Now, Rick flew all the way to Uganda with two of his kids to attend my graduation. Did I tell you there was dancing in my home? And so that I met Rick there. But for Heather, I was coming to Chicago to do my education, but I was going via the UK. So Heather lives in the UK, and so I escaped out of Heathrow. Not escaped, I went out, and so Compassion had this arrangement
okay.
for us, and so that's when I was able to meet her. It was amazing, amazing.
Great. Awesome. Let's see. How can my $38 a month possibly feed and educate a child? It doesn't seem real that that amount could do all that. And not only that, the medical and...
I have been surprised coming to the States that a cup of coffee costs $4. I can't get my mind around that. $4. I mean, I pay $1, you ask for another dollar, give another dollar, and then another dollar, and then another dollar to give me one cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Because where $38 goes a long way in Uganda.
Yeah.
And now, speaking as an accountant, I'm always thinking of a return on investment for every dollar. And so for $38 a month, that's probably person's coffee for the whole month, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But
not for some of them, no. But yeah.
Okay. But $38 goes so far in Uganda that the things that I have mentioned and more, I haven't even talked to you about the Vaseline that we got, the clothing that we got, the shoes that we got as small. I haven't even told you about that. But $38, yes, can do that and more in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's thinking about all you're spending from a return on investment standpoint, there is no better investment than investing in a child.
Absolutely. All right, let's see whether we got another one. Where is the money held? What would happen to the money if it went unused?
So the way it works is Compassion has its headquarters in Colorado Springs. So from here, resources are taken to Colorado. Then from Colorado, it is sent to what we call the Africa office, which is in Kenya. From the Africa office, it goes to Uganda. So Uganda, from Uganda headquarters, it's sent to the individual project. So Uganda has over 500 projects. And each sponsored project is allocated the resources based on the number of kids that have been sponsored in the project. So that's how the money is funneled straight through to the project. And so we're talking about where is money held. There is not a place where money is held.
Right.
Money is always in transition. It's going. The money that is held is that $7, that what we called complementary interventions, and that is upon request. So need. Some kids will need, for example, heart surgery. We've had one of my friends needed heart. Someone had a tumor that needed to be worked. And so $38 a month cannot do that.
Right.
But so there's that complementary intervention fund that is held by Compassion that is then provided for the child.
Sort of like a MediShare or something like that that we have in the States. Okay, think about that. $38 a month can do all of that. Let me see. Also, Compassion International has consistently been rated by people who rate nonprofits as exemplary in how they handle their funds. I saw it firsthand, but then I saw some studies that 84% of what is given goes directly to the programs, to these projects. 70% is to fund the things that keep the money going and the letters and everything else and the staff. But that is a huge percentage. They do a fantastic job and they're audited every year.
And so Charity Navigator, for those of you who do not know, look it up. Charity Navigator is the most reputable charity investigation independent houses.
Yeah.
It has consistently rated Compassion with 5-star rating for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, Compassion is right up there when it comes to integrity.
Yeah. When writing your child, are you free to write about the gospel in the letters?
Absolutely. And I think this is how I mentioned earlier on Heather. Man, I thank God for Heather. She's used words like Richmond, I love you, but she also sent me her favorite verses, what she was thinking.
Yeah.
And it's just that kind of interaction. That's why I called it not sponsorship. For me, it's discipleship. It's this is an amazing way of discipling kids by telling them the truth of the gospel. So yes, Compassion allows you to write the gospel in the letters.
And how glad are we that we got to share this morning with Richmond Wandera? I want you guys to let him know how much you guys appreciate him.
Thank you so much.
I get a little bit undone when I hear his story, and then I start thinking about, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
'Cause when I think about poverty, sometimes I think in terms of stats. I don't know if you think this way, but I see the stat, 3 billion people in the world live on less than $2.50 a day. That's a true stat. It may move you, it may not, but it's just a stat. It's a statistic that we can look at and we can go through our day and we don't have to think about it again, right? But when I took my trip to Colombia and I saw the contrast there, this beautiful street views, the vistas of the Andes Mountains, and then I contrast that with the extreme poverty that I saw in the slums right outside of Cartagena, where the sewage runs down the center of the street, where people with nothing to do, are just sitting on their porches watching the day go by. We were able to go into their homes. And I know you saw a video of a home. You'll see a video of a home in Colombia. And the ones that I saw weren't as nice as the ones that you're about to see. In fact, they had to put their mini fridge up on wooden blocks because every time it rained, the water would come up into the house about that high. And they had to put their little mini fridge. They have one electric wire coming into the home and divide it up between one light and their mini fridge. They were stuck there No doors in the house, by the way. Some curtains and some other things. But they were captive right there. That's the way that I would say it. They were held captive by their own poverty, chained up to being poor, feeling hopeless. And when you hear about the stats and when you see the videos, sometimes something negative happens, and it's that we feel hopeless about it. We almost feel paralyzed. 3 billion people. I can't help 3 billion people. Okay, I guess I'll just forget about it then. The end result of that way of thinking is that everything stays the same. Chained to a cycle of poverty, void of hope that anything is ever going to get any better, these children and their families are boxed in. They're defined by their poverty. They think, that's who I am. I'm thinking of Richmond standing in the rain and having his dignity stripped away as he thinks, this is who I am. This is the end. It's going to stay status quo for the rest of my life. What can change things in that context? What has the ability to change things? Well, love can. Love. The same love that flowed down from heaven through Jesus Christ that saved us, that love can literally change someone's life. And it can change that life today. Jesus, in his very first sermon, the first time he took a podium, he unrolled a scroll into Isaiah and he read this to the synagogue that he was preaching at. He said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." In other words, I've got resources, I've got power, I've got authority. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim that captives will be released, that the blind will see, that the oppressed will be set free. Isn't it interesting that Jesus chose this for his first sermon? This is the first thing he said. And I know that people who followed him from then on were going to be going, you know what? If that's what Jesus was about, if that's the first thing that he said, that's what I need to be about. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, the Bible says, there's no captivity. The Bible says that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty, there's freedom. And every time God's reality invades an area where it's not currently holding sway, the mark of that is that the captives are set free. God's reality intruding on the enemy's territory. Because the enemy, Satan, does not get to define us. God gets to do that. And he does it through his love. I want you to take a look at a video so you can get a picture in your mind of what it's like in Colombia.
In one of the most impoverished sections of Sincelejo, Colombia, 5-year-old Andres Sarmiento lives in a bamboo shack with his mother, father, and 2 older brothers. Although the tiny structure provides no relief from the staggering heat and humidity, it does keep them out of the almost daily rains, and they are grateful for it. They purchased it just 3 months earlier, and it's the first time that their family has owned the home in which they live. With little to no access to schools, the children of the community wander the streets during the week. Here, being a parent is simply trying to ensure survival, with almost no thought of breaking out of this cycle of poverty. When Andres' mother heard that through Compassion International, a child development center was opening in the local church, she jumped at the opportunity.
Y me enteré del proyecto de Compasión por medio de una muchachas que fueron a visitarme y vi que fue era una bendición para integrar mi hijo hacia la fundación, ya que es muy importante tenerlo ahí.
Through the project, Andres will not only be off the streets, but will be fed, educated, nurtured, and taught about Jesus for the next 13 years. Through the Compassion Child Development Center and the support of a sponsor who will fund and encourage him, Andres now has a chance not only to survive, but to thrive. He's no longer fated to victimhood in the cycle of poverty, but might someday be a leader that transforms his community. Anything is possible.
Y como todo padre que quiere sacar sus hijos hacia adelante, le doy gracias a Dios porque es una bendición, ya que Él nos ha abierto estas puertas para tener a mis hijos ahí.
See, love can define us. Love can change the definition that we've given ourselves or the definition that we've come to agree with. And it's done that in your own life. But love can define a kid today. That child's life can be radically changed based on what we do today. From a child of poverty to sons and daughters of the King. They'll have the chance to see how God defines them rather than how poverty has defined them. So that's what we're asking you to do. You remember when we were in the series in Galatians where it said, look, fulfill the law of Christ, share each other's burdens. See, I saw this firsthand. Someone asked about whether you could share the gospel or not. Here's the great thing about Compassion International. These community projects, all of them are based in a church. At the head of every Compassion project is a pastor called by God. This isn't just a humanitarian effort. This is the gospel going forward. This is about discipleship. There's no other organization uniquely qualified and uniquely situated in the world to make a forever difference. Nothing's better than the church. When the church is working right, nothing compares to it. Nothing comes close. The local church is the hope of the world. And Compassion International is not just, you know, just sending this money to an organization. They are strengthening the local church everywhere that they find projects. They investigate a church and they say, can you do this? Then we'll help fund it through sponsorship. That's what happens. They are Christ-centered. They are child-focused. What are the needs of that child? And they are church-based. At head of this thing is pastors. And we saw pastors talking about the people in their programs. Let me show you this picture. This is a pastor who's describing a kid who came up through the program and now owned a business. And you could see on his face as the pastor was describing it. That's Roberto. You saw him in the video. He was our translator there in the blue t-shirt. Every video I see in Colombia, Roberto's there no matter where it's at. I think that guy gets around. But the pride in that pastor's voice as he was saying, this guy used to, he was a troublemaker, you know, and he came up through the program. And now he owns a business and he's sponsoring a kid. It's unbelievable when you hear those stories. And we got to see the Bogota office there in Bogota where all of these workers were telling us about what they did, whether it was accounting or whether they were translating letters or whatever it was they were doing. But they were excited to tell us about that part. And then they would also, on their desk next to their computer, guess what was there? A picture of the kid that they were sponsoring there. And so, and they were sponsoring all over the world. We got to see Wes Stafford, who was the head of Compassion International. See if you can spot him. He's just covered in kids. He loves them so much. He said, you're never stand so tall as when you stoop to help a child. I love that quote from Wes. And we saw Jimmy Mulatto, the current head of Compassion International, pouring his heart out to this Bogota office. We got to see kids come through the leadership development program. Two young ladies spoke to us, and we got to take a picture with them, and both of them are sponsoring kids. They're in college, and they're sponsoring kids. They don't, guys, this is real, and I know we have a tendency in America to be cynical, and I know we think, oh, but what's the catch? Guys, when you see it firsthand, and I strongly encourage you to both go through the Compassion experience and go on a trip to check out what they're doing or investigate, man, there's no catch. There's no catch. Like Galatians 6:2 says, share each other's burdens and in that way obey the law of Christ. The law of Christ, which is love God with everything you've got and love your neighbor like you love yourself. We have the chance to do that. And this is not just transactional, by the way. Yes, $38 a month. But it's a discipleship program. And those kids, when they get a letter, they hold that letter close. They run down the street and they show their friends the letter that they got. Today, you can change a child's life forever for $38 a month. It almost seems laughable to me. Bring God's reality. into the life of a child that's desperate for it. Not with handouts, by the way, which don't honor the image of God within every person, but with the hope and the love that God brings. Let's love these children as sons and daughters of the King. We had 170 envelopes out there. But they're not just envelopes. There are 170 kids that don't know we're meeting today. They don't know what's coming their way, do they? Reality. But they are sons and daughters of the King. We see a day where the best leaders in Cartagena come out of the slums because of what we've done. They come out of the poorest neighborhoods because these are children that God wired up with unique gifts and unique intelligence, unique creativity that we're going to unleash. We're going to release them from poverty in Jesus' name to go out there and change the world. We can see a day when that happens. What would happen if every family in this church decided today we're going to invest in the life of a compassion child today? How many Richmonds are walking around the streets of Villa Hermosa outside of Cartagena, an ironic name for a slum? How many Richmonds are there? Hey, you know what? Let's find out. Let's find out together. Because of what you do today, you're going to make an impact on eternity. Let's do that. Let's pray.